hello and welcome to the first ever Leafs Nation podcast. My name is JP Nakota.
And I'm Danny Gray.
And we're going to be your hosts for this show going forward. Each show we're going to have a different guest, but for now we're just going to talk the two of us here. And first off, we're going to start talking about who the real NHL All-Star starters are.
Well, I think the two players that the voters actually got right would be on defense. You know, as much as I hate Ottawa and hate Erik Karlsson, he's a dynamic offensive defenseman who's having one of the best seasons points-wise for a defenseman since the lockout, and that's the kind of thing you want to see at the All-Star game. And Dion Phaneuf has had a fantastic first half of the season as well. He slips a little bit lately, but he plays a lot of minutes. He captains the Leafs. He's a guy that people want to see there, so I'm okay with those selections. As far as everybody else, obviously, I mean, I get including Alfredson and stuff like that, but if we're going for the genuine players who I think should be the starters, I'd have to put Kessel, Drew, and Malkin up front. And just for shits and giggles, I would put Brian Elliott in goal because he has just had like a fantastic season, and it's sort of a little bit of Project Mayhem because the Senators gave up on him. So having Brian Elliott start in goal, I think, would be hilarious and just something neat because he's probably not going to do anything else in his career because, you know, every few seasons or so he puts together 10 or 20 good games and then just falls apart. So it would be nice for him to go out on a high note.
Yeah, I think I absolutely agree on the defenseman. You know, Karlsson perhaps more than Phaneuf. Phaneuf, you know, is an offensive minded defenseman, loves to join the rush, and that's the kind of thing he loves to show off at the All-Star game, right? You know, honestly, there are better defensemen to choose from than him overall, but I mean, the All-Star game is not a normal game, right? If I'm choosing players to win in the All-Star game, I'm not gonna pick some shutdown defender or whatever that crept in there. I feel like Weber could also be a pretty good choice. Chara, yeah, as a starter, can't go wrong. On forward, I would go with Malkin, for sure. Again, because if I'm a captain and I really want to win this game, I'm going to go with the guy who has a hot hand, right? Malkin just recently overtook the lead in points for the NHL, and I imagine Neil spent a fair bit of time playing with him, so you might want to match those two up. And then somebody who's really good at distributing the puck. So maybe Taze or Hank or Dank Sedin. Yeah, I think my three would probably be Malkin, Neil. Well, let's say Henrik Sedin. Sounds so soulful, don't you agree? I invented sweat. Popping bottles, putting supermodels in the cab. Proof. So the thing is that the Leafs, they played 8 of their last 9 games at home, and, you know, you would expect, given that they are better at home than they are on the road, that this would have been a time, you know, when they could have really surged back into the top 8. But that hasn't really happened. They're 5-4-0 in the last 9. And now, from here on in, they're going to play more games on the road than they will at home, which is probably bad news. So far, they've played 25 at home, and they've played 22 on the road. So, you know, there's not many more games on the road than at home. But I don't want to put too much stock in, you know, the idea of, like, a statement game or an important stretch. You know, because, of course, we all know that that kind of thinking is bogus. But, you know, certainly, it's going to look like an uphill battle if suddenly they have games to make up and more road trips to go on. So, I mean, the fact that the penalty kill hasn't allowed a goal in, I think it's 10 games now.
It hasn't allowed a goal this year.
This year. Yeah, you know, as James Myrtle pointed out today, I feel like it's a bad trade. I'll take winning over a penalty.
Yeah, game. Yeah, definitely. But I mean, 5-4, no, not bad. They're not falling behind. They're keeping pace. And I think that, again, I'm the ever optimist here. So as long as they can do that, the longer they sort of hang around, stay in the race while playing sort of mediocre to, you know, not top end hockey, it is great, right? I mean, eventually, I think they put it together. Maybe they make a couple deals, some things shake out. Again, it's sort of, they managed to survive their sort of bad stretch of December without falling too far behind. They rattled off 4 straight wins and then, you know, proceeded to find a way to lose 3 games, only one of which, you know, they played terrible in. And so these things happen. And I think that as long as they keep pace and as long as they keep doing what they're doing, things are going to work out really well. But like I said, it's going to go right down to the wire, which is what has me worried. But at the same time, I think that that. That's really all you can ask for this team. Everyone said they were going to be a playoff bubble team going into the year, and that's what they've done. So I think they're playing to expectations, to the realistic ones. Obviously, if anyone's following, ask Brian Burke out there. People think that the Leafs should be a cup contender, but as long as they think they're fighting for a playoff spot right until the last week, and not the same way that they were last year, because they weren't really fighting for a playoff spot. You know, they were out of it by with about 2 weeks left in the season. It sort of was like, you know, that was going to be it. They were dead in the water. But if they're sort of playing meaningful games in April with significant playoff implications, then I think that that's all we can expect really at this point.
Yeah, I'm you know, when you look at you know, the more common sort of predictors for success, I mean, goal differential is the first one. You know, they're still sitting at an even goal differential, which is pretty good. You know, there are two teams in right now that have below zero, and right. You know, that bodes well. I think, you know, that site, the Sports Club Stats, I think, yeah, they have the least playoff chances rated at something like a 55% chance of making it right now, and I feel like it's probably weighted pretty heavily on goal differential. But if you take a look at the Fenwick numbers, the Leafs don't look so good. So, I don't know. It could be a question of shooting percentage.
Well, I think they looked even worse last year at about this time. So obviously, not to sort of read too much into things, but, you know, things can happen. They can get on a roll. And I think the problem the last few years is that if they do get on a roll, they were just way too far back. Whereas this year, they've been able to sort of keep themselves in it. So I think that they're due to go on a roll. And when they do, you know, they're in a better position now than they have been in the past. And I think there's a few teams in front of them that could fall apart or could start to sort of fall down. I mean, you've got Ottawa there. You've got the Florida Panthers that are kind of sitting there. Mm-hmm. The Washington Capitals, who knows what's going to happen with them. Pittsburgh Penguins, I mean, Malkin's on fire right now, but if he goes down with an injury or if anything happens, you know, these aren't the teams you sort of expected to be around, but there are definitely some beatable teams in that area. New Jersey Devils, again, you know, Brodeur's old, Hedberg. Yeah. So, you know, these aren't sort of teams that they really need to sort of be very concerned with. I think they're sort of definitely beatable teams. And I think that the more teams involved in this race at this point are the better. And they're definitely separating themselves from teams like, you know, Carolina, Montreal, even though they won last night, Buffalo, you know, the Islanders. Those teams are sort of not really going to pose much of a challenge. I mean, they can play sort of spoiler like the Leafs have in the past, but I like their odds. And again, that's just because I'm a bit of an optimist. But I also understand that, you know, if they don't fix some of those, you know, Fenwick numbers and a little bit more puck possession game, then that could be a problem. But I'm gonna choose to remain optimistic.
So the next topic we're going to flow into here is the trade deadline. And we're probably going to address this in a few podcasts. But, you know, right now, the only thing Brian Burke has really come out and said emphatically that he's really looking for is more top six size. And honestly, I don't really know if that's what this team needs right now.
Well, I think it's crazy, and as many people have pointed out, you know, this team is, what, sixth or seventh in the league in goals scored. You know, they've got... the scoring depth has been an issue, but they've got three lines that can score. They've got plenty of guys with those sort of tools. You know, we were talking about goal differential earlier. It's a lot easier, or another way to go about it is to prevent goals from being scored. So if we could address some defense or goaltending, which that's been very a curious omission from Burke. He hasn't said anything about that thus far. You know, that would be another way to address that goal differential as opposed to going out and getting that forward. But it's definitely something that he said. Obviously, there was a lot of James Van Riemsdyk rumors, and that's been interesting. I think that's what he wants. You know, Burke sort of has this mindset that he has his player and his player that he wants to go after, and he's going to get them. You know, he targeted Dion Phaneuf in the past. He targeted Phil Kessel in the past. He wanted to move Thomas Cobberley. Those were all things that he did. Even last year when he was trading Versteeg, he really tried hard to push for Van Riemsdyk. Philly wouldn't let him go. Obviously, with Van Riemsdyk on the shelf right now with concussion, that sort of trade becomes a little bit less likely. But I think that since Burke has said it enough, it is definitely what he's looking to add, and I think he's going to add someone. Whether or not we think that makes sense, he said it could come from in-house from a guy like Joel Colburn, but I just don't think he's big enough right now. Maybe it's sort of more of a third-liner, tweener kind of guy, like a Travis Moen, but I think he's definitely going to add some size up front in the forward unit. I would prefer to go with a young player with a lot more upside, but who knows what Burke's going to do.
Okay, fun fact. So I looked at the average size of the lead forwards compared to the average size of the forwards in the league. And you know what? Pretty much, they are like dead average, all right? Now, I mean, you know, maybe Burke wants them to be bigger, so, you know, it's neither here nor there.
I don't think Burke wants to be average size. Yeah. You know, I think he wants to be up there with the Rangers and the Bruins, and that's sort of the style that he wants to play.
Yeah. Now,
whether or not that's the right thing, but that's what he wants.
Here's the other thing. I even went so far as to calculate it based on like a weighted average based on how much ice time a player spends on the ice. So, I mean, you know, if...
Well, you did a lot of research.
Well, probably going to include it in an article at some point. Anyway, he's got a team that even after, you know, waiting it for, you know, top six fours or whatever, is really just average in terms of size. Now, what I find sort of strange is that when we look at, you know, games like the Montreal game, the Leafs really struggle with puck recovery. Now, this has been, you know, I hate to rag on Phil Kessel, but, you know, this is probably the weakest element of his game. You know, the puck is off his stick, it's just sort of like, well, I might as well skate to the bench. The guy in previous years in particular used to just, like, I mean, it looked like he just went home for the day when the puck left his stick. But this year has been a whole lot better. Elliot Friedman did that segment on him on Hockey Night in Canada, and that was one of the things that other players identified this year about Phil Kessel. They said it was different, that he's going much deeper into his zone to recover the puck and then start the rush from there, and as a result, he's getting more speed by the time he hits like the offensive blue line. So, you know, that's better from him, but still, you know, I mean, Phil Kessel is never going to be a Pavel Datsyuk of puck possession, so, you know, I think we just kind of have to live with that and you know, take him for what he is. And, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is I do see a weakness there that could perhaps be solved by size. But, I don't know. Picking up a defenseman seems much more logical to me.
Yeah, definitely. I think that what I wanted to say was I think they're going to be both buyers and sellers, if that makes sense. I think unlike previous years, we have a few players that we could sort of trade that would actually net us some assets that could help now and in the future. You look at the guys who he was sort of shipping out of town at the deadline before, and they were guys like, you know, Nick Andropov, Alexei Ponikarovsky, guys who really aren't contributing at a sort of high rate in the NHL right now. Obviously, Andropov's playing with the Jets, doing rather well, you know, decent, but nobody like a Grabowski or a Kuhlman who you could get teams to sort of part with significant assets for, but you could still get younger or, you know, maybe make a lateral move to a guy around the same age. So I think that that's the approach that Burke wants to take, is sort of be a little bit of both a buyer and a seller, help the team now, but make sure you're not sort of mortgaging and selling the future for someone who's over the hill. And I don't see them parting with a lot of prospects. That's just my gut feeling. But I think he feels guys like Fratton are ready to step back into the lineup if a hole opens up. A guy like Colborne, you know, he could bring Colborne up to fill a slot left void by Grabowski maybe, or you could just sort of slide everybody up one in the lineup. And even a guy like Corbin and Holzer, or as terrible as he's been, Keith Ollie, can sort of slot in and play in the lineup if they do deal someone who's currently in the lineup right now. So I think you're going to see a bit of a combination of buying and selling, somewhat similar to what they tried to do last year when they offloaded Versteeg, Beauchemin, and Cobberle, and you know, picked up some futures, but also picked up some guys who were able to contribute you know, right now, like Joffrey Lupul, obviously.
You know, I think for the past few years, people have sort of grown accustomed to the idea, or grown accustomed to the situation where the Leafs just don't have enough NHL players to fill a good NHL roster. You know, they've been throwing in, like, these, you know, sort of replacement-level players and hoping they turn into something. And, you know, I mean, it's never a big risk if they don't. But, you know, everyone's always been sort of eager to see what the kids on the farm can do, and, you know, eager to drag them up too. But I think all of a sudden we're in the situation where, or the Leafs are in the situation where, you know, I don't think they really have a surplus at any position. I mean, if you look at their defense, I mean, you know, like when Komisarek went down, like who wasn't happy to have, you know, Cody Franson?
So, oh, I mean, John Michael Lyles has been a huge loss for this team. I think that you put him on the blue line, the power play looks a little bit better. You know, the puck movement is a little bit smoother. And I think he's definitely, I think people aren't talking enough about how much the Leafs are missing him.
Yeah, so I guess I don't think the Leafs are really in a place where, you know, there's a log jam yet. Maybe when Lyles gets back, they're, you know.
Yeah,
maybe,
well, that's the thing.
Like, you want players there in case of injury. And I think that's any true team that goes deep in the playoffs is going to have that. So
that's true. But I think a key difference between this year and last is a guy like Matt Fratton. Take Matt Fratton. I think if Matt Fratton is on the team last year and has the same kind of season, he plays all 82 games. He doesn't get sent down to the Marlies. Right. We didn't have that depth. We didn't have those NHL players capable of stepping up. Same with Joel Colborne. And that's great. And that is a testament to the job that Burke has done sort of building this team, that we don't need these guys to step in right away and be difference makers. But at the same time, I feel like those couple of guys give Burke the idea that, you know, he does have a surplus and that he can get rid of a few of these players, whether or not that's correct. But I think that they do think they have a bit of some wiggle room there, and they've got some guys they can ship out without sort of crippling the team. We'll see whether or not that's correct, but I think that that's the mentality. I really think someone's going somewhere. As vague and as sort of open-ended that is, but I definitely don't see Burke not doing anything. And I think that I think a guy like Grabowski might be on the move, you know?
Well, you know, yeah, his contract status, yeah, it makes him a prime candidate. Kuhlman's as well, though, to a lesser degree, because he's an RFA.
Well, and he also has scored like 6 goals this year, so I think
you don't want to sell low.
No, definitely not. I think he definitely has more to contribute, so I think you don't want to deal him because you know he can be a better player, but at the same time, he is one of those guys, yeah, who would be attractive, but I don't think, yeah, you're not going to get peak value for him right now.
I think that this is an interesting period for the Leafs, too, because the trade deadline seems to be much less important for them, or at least for Burke, than, you know, as he would say, getting out ahead of the trade deadline, right? So this seems to be, like, Thomas Cavalier was dealt in early February, if I'm not mistaken. Francois Beauchemin, early February.
Yeah.
And then Dion Phaneuf, of course, and Jaguar were both acquired at the end of January. So we are getting right into that peak, I guess you would sort of say, hunting season. Burke's always using those kinds of analogies. So, yeah, this is peak hunting or fishing season, as far as he's concerned, I think. So I would expect something to go down, and probably the brunt of what is going to happen in terms of trades is probably going to happen in the next week or two instead of, you know, late February.
Right. I think it would be interesting to look at the effect that the All-Star break has had on Burke's trade. And I always feel like the trades sort of seem to happen around the All-Star break. Maybe he, you know, has some conversations face-to-face during that time, or maybe it's just the time off. Maybe it's purely coincidental. I don't know, but it feels like that's sort of his time as opposed to the trade deadline is when he does all of his moves, just generally like a little bit before, a little bit after the All-Star break. Maybe he feels like that's the better time to get involved. But I think definitely with Burke, you're not waiting for the trade deadline. He definitely likes to be active a little bit beforehand.
I apologize to them all with the same group text. Bring me tea! Bring me coffee!
Yeah. Alright, well, let's move along here.
You're not the boss of me.
Alright, so last segment here. Or perhaps a middle one, depending on how we edit this.
You never know.
So, okay, if you had to pick a GOAT for the season, for the Leafs team this season, and you had to pick a hero, who would you pick?
Well, I'll start with my hero, and I'm going to go with Joffrey Leupel. Obviously, would have been a really unlikely pick. He was sort of Kemi's GOAT going into the season. I think that a lot of people weren't expecting too much from him. When he came over in the Beauchemin deal, a lot of people saw it as a salary dump just to, you know, take on Jake Gardner And he played well towards the end of the season, but, you know, he had some big injury issues. You know, he's never been a sort of prolific scorer. His career high is 53 points with the Ducks, and that was back in 2005. And he's only gotten over 40 points twice other than that in his career, and that was with Philadelphia. But he's at 51 right now, so he's too shy of his career high. He's got 20 goals. I could see him scoring 30, 35 goals, which would be a career high. He's already got a career high in assists. He's never had more than 26 assists, and he's got 31 right now. So I don't know how you can say, I mean, you can't expect anything more from Drawford Lupo. His defensive game has some holes. As we saw last night on the Montreal goal, he's not strong enough on the boards, but he's scoring enough to make up for that right now. Obviously being broken up, him and Kessel, but they were back together last night. So that experiment lasted about a game and a half. So, you know, he scored a few big goals, that goal against Detroit. You know, he's been named to the All-Star team and is an alternate captain. He could have been named a starter just based on how he's been playing this year. And it's just a great story. You know, he has almost missed a whole year. The Ducks sort of gave up on him. He's been traded a few times for Chris Pronger. So I think he's a really good redemption story. And he'd be my Masterson nod as well for the Leafs, because I think, you know, he's shown that dedication. You hear all the stories about the special cushion he sits on in the dressing room, and, you know, and it's been great. And if you're on Twitter and you're following him, he trolls all the other fan bases. So I think that adds another element to it. So you piss Buffalo off and you score a career high, you're a hero in my books.
You know, I think the other thing it speaks to is the value of a full training camp and off season to get ready. I mean, jumping into the middle of a season is difficult. And, you know, obviously having the full off season to prepare really helps Phil Kessel. I mean, there was a significant step forward in his game from year one with the Leafs to year two with the Leafs. And I think, you know, we're seeing some of that same effect on Lupo.
Yeah, and that wasn't entirely just sort of getting a year older. I think that definitely helped him. And I think the Ducks sort of shuffled him up and down the lineup. They didn't, you know, even, I think it was Randy Carlyle told him straight up that he didn't think he was good enough to be a left winger in the NHL or top line winger. So I think that being given a consistent shot, obviously playing with Kessel has really helped. But they separated them against the Wild and he looked pretty good. And, you know, he's got some nice dangles out there. At times, he's sort of been a bit of a physical force. But again, while his game does have some deficiencies, I'd say he has to be my hero. So who's yours?
Well, I don't know. If you didn't pick Kessel, I have to pick Kessel. That's the way it goes. I mean, you know, James Myrtle made a comment earlier in the season. He said, right now, the Leafs are really outscoring their problems more than they are fixing a lot of their defensive problems. And you know what? I absolutely agree. And, you know, their scoring's dried up the last, you know, 10 games or so. And, you know, that's when we've seen the team start to stumble a little bit. Because, yeah, those defensive problems, they're still there. So, yeah, the fact that the Leafs are you know, sniffing at the playoff door means that Phil Kessel and Joffrey Lupo have been producing like crazy. And that's it. Without those two, I mean, goodbye season. Because we really haven't been getting the goaltending that we had hoped for. I mean, you know, that sort of leads into my GOAT. I'm going to say Leafs goaltending in general.
Now, a lot of just people, as a whole?
I mean, a lot of people are really happy with Jonas Gustafsson's recent play, as they should be. But, you know, he's, you know, as I think it was Berkey pointed out the other day at Pinscher Planet Puppets, you know, there are stretches of 10, 15 games where Vesa Toskala looked like an NHL goalie. So, I mean, you know, before I get too excited about Jonas Gustafsson, I'm going to wait to see him put up, you know, probably at least 40 games before I even start to think about, you know, giving that guy another contract. Now, James Reimer, of course, you know, he's had his injury, and then, of course, Ryan Wilson, I don't know. I don't know what he's thinking. I guess he's deciding to ride a hot Gustafsson, which is sort of like a cold regular goaltender. But anyway, so
it's a relative term, right?
Yeah, right. So Wilson has been riding Gustafsson, and I really feel like, you know, if Reimer had been given the chance to get into more games, he'd probably be doing better than he is.
Yeah, you got to give him a start there. And I think with the penalty kill improved, his save percentage was dragged down by a terrible, dreadful penalty kill save percentage, which is obviously unsustainable. He could be bad, but he's not going to be, you know, 700 bad. And just looking at the Leafs goaltending here, Ben Scrivens is second in save percentage at 904, just shy of Jonas Gustafsson's, you know, sparkling hot 907. And his goals against is .296, which is just a bit above Gustafsson. So, you know, Ben Scrivens, who was just sort of a placeholder, played almost as well as Jonas Gustafsson. So I think that, like you said, that's been the big deficiency for the Leafs, and they're definitely outscoring their problems. But it's just Kessel and Lupul. Finnoff is third on the team, and he's got 28 points. It's insane. Like, they're not scoring nearly enough. They're not getting enough production out of guys like MacArthur, Kuhlman, and Grabowski. Grabowski's got 27 points, which is great, but Tyler Bozak right now is outscoring Clark MacArthur and Nikolai Kuhlman. And John Michael Lyles is eighth on the team, and he's only played 31 games.
So, all right, so who's your GOAT then?
My GOAT would have to be Luke Shen. I think that, like we've been saying, you know, the defensive side of this team has definitely been struggling. The team has needed someone to step up and become a shutdown top two pair defenseman, sort of like Francois Beauchemin leaving was a big loss for this team. It created a hole. Finnoff stepped up. He's played well. Gunnarsson's played well, but we just can't find another defenseman that's reliable that we can put on the top two units. That's this team's biggest weakness. And that's what Luke Shen is supposed to be. That's what he projects as. I know he's young. I know he's still developing. I know that he's been scoring, you know, pretty decently, but he's wasted an opportunity to step up and be a big time contributor to the team. And I think that for that reason, he has to be my GOAT. I would be perfectly fine with trading Shen for someone like James Van Riemsdyk or a player of that age with significant upside, because I think that he's been given the opportunity to step into that role, and he just hasn't done it yet. He looked good the last couple of games playing with Dion Phaneuf, but I think that's more Dion Phaneuf than it is Luke Shen. And Wilson's basically taken him off the penalty kill, and he doesn't get any power play time, so he's just even strength at this point, and that's not what you need from a guy like Luke Shen. So I just think he has failed to step up yet. Maybe now that I've called him out, he will, but right now I think he definitely has to be my GOAT.
You know, the other night too, one thing you haven't mentioned is that Luke Shen, I mean, there are defenders out there of Luke Shen that, you know, they will tell you he is an all right skater, but that's just not true.
No, he got beat to the puck against Montreal. I can't remember who it was, but he just looked so slow and lumbering out there. He's just not fast enough. And a lot of people said it's because he put on a lot of weight over the summer. He tried to get bigger. The same thing sort of apparently Mike Komisarek did that a couple years ago. And I believe it was last season, yeah, that he put on a lot of weight in the offseason trying to get bigger. And conversely, he lost a lot of weight this summer, so I don't know why Luke Shen didn't learn from that. But and Komisarek's played a lot better this season, again, relatively speaking. Maybe Komisarek can be that guy, but I don't know. But yeah, I think Luke Shen just needs to get a little bit faster or be a little bit better positionally. You know, guys like Hal Gill, guys like Zdeno Chara, who are bigger guys but not the fleetest of foot, they make up for that by being in better position and sort of getting themselves in the right areas. And Luke Shen just hasn't been able to do that yet.
All right. Well, I think we'll wrap it up here. So thanks for listening, if you're still listening. And if you have any comments, suggestions, or questions, please feel free to post them down the bottom. Take care.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're looking to have a few guests come on in the future. You know, if you have any suggestions for guests or if you'd like to be a part of the podcast, you know, just shoot us an email and let us know. And I'd like to add, obviously, JP, that I dominated in my shinny game this morning. I was just tearing it down out there today. I won the shootout contest, so my hockey skills are developing slowly. Yeah.